With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
The Twitter bio is getting a little weighty here for our man Joe Marino, who's on the West Her Hotline. It feels like I could gobble up a lot of your time with us here, just laying out all the things you got your fingers in here. Of course, Draft Network is the lead there, but it's Draft Dudes and Locked On Bills and... Man, you are all over it, Joe. Nice to have you back on. Thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. It's always about creating content all day. So
yeah, man.
Nice to come on with you guys.
You are a content creator, no doubt about that. Content for us, content for you, content for everybody. So I've spent a lot of time today talking about the Bills running back situation, Joe. And Brandon Bean shared some comments with our Sal Capaccio that are up at our website, WGR550.com, and competition, the word is used a lot, but Frank Gore pushing and the young guys pushing, and we'll see which guy is hitting the holes the best and which guy the line seems to trust the best. And I don't know, man, ever since really Gore, Yeldon, and then the draft pick of Devin Singletary, I've been just sort of waiting for a shoe to drop on LeSean McCoy. And I feel like what I'm reading from Brandon Bean today is just nudging me closer to that than I've ever been. What are your thoughts on how the Bills are situated at running back currently?
Well, when you think about the running back situation, I kind of believe that it's going to be a two-headed attack, mostly with Frank Gore and LeSean McCoy. And it's not like if the Bills were going to move on from McCoy, it would have happened by now. You know, in 2017 was a lot of rumblings about him being not part of the mix, and then in 2018 again, and he's still here, and throughout the course of it, up until recently, kind of been very indicative from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott that LeSean McCoy's the guy. And I think this is going to be a brand-new-looking tandem in 2020. But with Josh Allen in year two, to have a couple of veterans alongside him in the backfield and Gore and McCoy, maybe that's going to go a long way for him feeling more comfortable. It's going to go a long way in him having the protection that he needs when you need a back in there to pick up blitzers and pass pro and chip off the edges. And in 2020, when he's in year three of his career, they could be better equipped to take on some younger talent alongside him in the backfield. I don't sleep on that Frank Gore signing. This is a player that I know he's older, but he was very effective for the Miami Dolphins last year behind a bad offensive line and a team that couldn't pass the ball. And he had the most yards per contact for his career, most yards per contact on average after contact for his entire career since his rookie season. So he's still effective, and I think that he's going to play a bigger role than maybe some people might think in 2019.
If he does claim a bigger role, like, do you think it makes a lot of sense to keep McCoy in any kind of a diminished role here? Like, would that work for McCoy? Do you think that would work for the Bills? Like, there are certain guys, I feel like Gore and McCoy are almost equals in this way. They're both guys that you have on your team, and I think you want to make sure that you're not marginalizing them in any way because of, you know, how respected they are and what they've already accomplished in the league.
Well, if anything, they're complementary players in terms of their skill sets. They win in different ways, and I like that in terms of a duo. I think the real challenge here for this running back situation is making sure that you get enough of a look at Devin Singletary to feel comfortable with him being one of your lead guys in 2020. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Singletary is a really interesting player, and he has good vision, he has good contact balance, but he just isn't necessarily the best athlete. And for the ways that he won at Florida Atlantic, very curious to see how it translates to the NFL level. And I think that there needs to be opportunities for him to touch the football to find out what he can be. Basically, as a running back, when you're drafted and you're in your prime. And so the Bills need to find out really quick what they have in Devin Singletary.
Yeah, I feel very strongly about him having been a third-round pick, Joe. You know, with the crowd they've got at running back, this is a part of the motivation for even talking about McCoy in the way that I am. Gore, I've got McCoy, I've got TJ Yeldon. I mean, he doesn't have to have a spot cemented, but they did sign him to a two-year contract, and he is really the accomplished pass catcher of the group. And then Singletary, and I get to game day, I don't want Devin Singletary, a third-round pick, inactive. Like, I want him to have a role so that, like you're saying, I can find out either, A, can he do more for me this year than I should have expected, or at the very least, can I count on him moving forward when Gore and McCoy have played out their contracts?
Yeah, the interesting thing about TJ Yeldon, we're talking about potentially the Bills' fourth running back, and when you're going to be the fourth running back on a team, you have to play special teams. And TJ Yeldon, for his entire career, has never played a snap of special teams. And that doesn't bode well for him. He comes from this Jacksonville situation where you know that they want to run the football, a heavy power run football team. Leonard Fournette's had a lot of question marks about him so far in his career. They knew what they had in TJ Yeldon, and they let him walk. They brought in three veterans and drafted Ryquell Armstead. And so they completely overhauled their backup running back situation, which is a premium position for the Jaguars. I get nervous, despite there being a two-year contract, that TJ Yeldon is going to be a football player that's going to be on this team. I think you can find a back like TJ Yeldon just about every offseason, and I'm just not sure that when you think about that fourth running back, that it will be him when you have proven special teams contributors like Keenan Rice Perry and Patrick DeMarco if the Bills do keep a fullback.
Talking with Joe Marino, senior NFL draft analyst for the Draft Network, as well as working on the Locked On Bills podcast here on WGR with me. So do you think McCoy's year last year was more a combination of factors that were outside of his control, i.e. rookie quarterback and not a lot of passing weapons, so thus no respect for the passing game at all, and then the line struggling? Or do you think there are signs of deterioration in his abilities at this point?
I think probably both. Maybe, you know, I certainly, he's getting older and his physical skill set is not what it was 2 or 3 years ago. But when you talk about this Bills offense last year, an offensive line that lost Eric Wood and Richie Incognito unexpectedly, traded away Cordy Glenn, you have a lot of new pieces up front. Four different quarterbacks are starting. You have your starting receivers are both cut by week 13. And I just feel like it's a very difficult situation for any running back to find production in last year's offense, because there's no way as a defense going up against the Bills offense that you're going to lose the football game because LeSean McCoy beat you. You're going to make those quarterbacks that played for the Bills last year beat you. And I just think he was banged up a little bit, and all of those factors, plus that he is declining because he is aging, all of that led to a lackluster season. I think with Frank Gore back in the mix, LeSean McCoy is a prideful man. We know that he wants to get those 12,000 career rushing yards. I think there's a chance that you could see a bounce back year from McCoy. I'm not predicting 12 or 1,300 yards. At least a season when we look back at it, the Bills will say, I'm glad LeSean McCoy was part of this team.
It almost seems like it would be, I think, pretty surprising, given that Gore is here, if McCoy had 1,000 yards, right? I mean, they're probably going to, like, Gore is going to play a role that'll probably be significant enough that it would keep the Bills from having a 1,000-yard rusher, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't anticipate any of the Bills running backs getting 1,000 yards, but I think you'll see a decent distribution between Gore and McCoy. But then again, like we've talked about already, you've got to see what you have in Singletary. And if he winds up getting hot, right, then you got to ride that a little bit. So I don't think any one back is going to have a great statistical season, but how they can work in terms of a stable of backs could be really important. And you like to think with the new weapons outside of receiver, Josh Allen in year two, the opportunities to run the football will be much better this season.
So, what is the likelihood that this line, the Bills went, they went volume over quality, I guess with the exception of Mitch Morse, who was arguably the best center available on the open market, and they landed him and paid him a big dollar. And then there's a lot of guys that have started a lot of games that are on pretty modest contracts, but I guess the hope is that they'll find five guys that can play, and they've also got a rookie in there in Ford that they're, I think, pretty bullish on. How much better do you think it's reasonable to expect this line to be with all – we're looking at probably four new starters with Deion Dawkins holding down left tackle.
Yeah, I think it's a big concern entering the season. I feel like the Bills have viable starters at every spot. You like to think that Mitch Morse is going to be a high-impact center. Deion Dawkins builds off of his rookie season in 2017. But that Bobby Johnson in his first year as an offensive line coach in the NFL, that he finds the right mix of guys, and he finds them quick. Because the Bills, I mean, the real disappointment for OTAs and minicamp and stuff was that Mitch Morse wasn't really part of the mix. Quentin Spain, who I kind of felt had a good chance of claiming a starting spot, he breaks his thumb, and he's got a setback already. And so you've got to find the right mix of guys, because them gelling together, the communication piece of it is so important. And then when you look at the Bills' schedule, the opportunity to really stack wins together, it happens in the first half of the season. And the Bills need to be in position to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Things get tougher late in the year, and the Bills aren't going to be in a great position to climb themselves out of a hole just because the opponents are so challenging later in the season. The Bills got to get the right five together, and they've got to hit the ground running early to take advantage of a weaker first half of the season schedule.
So, Joe, how about at receiver here? We've got, you know, the free agent signings, John Brown, Cole Beasley. Most of the fantasy people that we talk to sort of favor the proven commodities there as being the top targets, like the, you know, expected catches. A lot of guys seem to lean towards Beasley and Brown, and I mean, I get that. Foster has a pretty small sample size, but I'm pretty bullish on Foster. I think they've left themselves enough room here, even with Brown and Beasley being signed and Zay Jones still being here and then whatever else depth there is available, that if Foster does progress, that he could emerge as the Bills' number one wideout. What do you think of that? Does he have that potential to you?
I do. I think that he's probably the most complete receiver in terms of upside and the areas of the field that he can attack. And obviously the vertical skill set, we saw that last year, but I really think maybe it was underappreciated late in the season how more he got became involved in the offense and the different levels of the field he started to win at. Now you add in these other pieces like a John Brown, who's going to another field stretcher that can really push coverage and lift coverage vertically, that it's going to create more opportunities for the underneath patterns that I know Robert Foster can run, that we know Cole Beasley can run, Zay Jones, getting the tight ends involved, getting the running backs involved, all because of that spacing. A lot of people have been asking me about how do all these guys work together and get on the field at the same time. The Bills went empty a ton last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to happen a lot this year. You're going to see five wide receivers, and you're going to have multiple slots. So maybe Cole Beasley and Zay Jones are both better from the slot, but you're going to have multiple slots on the field at the same time. I think this is all about spacing, and you make a good point. The guy that I think is going to be most equipped and primed to take advantage of the space, and the guy with the biggest ceiling in terms of being a long-term fixture here, guy that's got chemistry with Josh Allen already, is Robert Foster. If there's a receiver that I believe is going to have a good statistical season of all of these guys, I think it's going to be Foster.
I'm glad you mentioned and referenced their tendency to go empty and spread the field out. And it feels to me, and I didn't study this, I haven't looked at the breakdowns to know if it's pre-Allen injury versus post-Allen injury, but my eyes, like my memories, my recollection watching the games tells me that was more prevalent after Allen returned from his injury. And that I'm encouraged by that, if that's correct, that it felt to me like maybe Brian Daboll kind of went to school while Allen was out and figured out maybe more so, hey, let's see. We had an offense set up for Nathan Peterman to be our quarterback. I mean, oh my gosh, the folly of that it was almost hilarious to even think about now. But that's what they had, and then Allen got thrust in there, and then once he was out for a little while, it felt to me like they had some very different-looking elements after Allen came back. Does that sound right to you?
You're exactly right. The Bills used the most different personnel groupings of any team in the NFL last year. And a big part of that was late in the season when the Bills started to go empty. And that was a very good thing for Josh Allen. And what that does, when you're empty and you go five wide, you almost force the defense to be in man coverage. And when they're in man coverage, two really good things happen for a young quarterback like Josh Allen. Number one, it makes him hard to rotate coverage and disguise looks, and it really simplifies what he's reading in terms of the defense. But when you're in man coverage, there's no eyes in the backfield, which creates very favorable opportunities for him to take up with, off with the football and create with his legs. And so that was a big adjustment that Brian Daboll made late in the season that, you know, with Josh Allen's time away, and really I think gave them the opportunity to implement that type of stuff. You make a good point as well that early in the season you saw an offense that was designed for Nate Peterman to run, which is not really tailor-made for Josh Allen where he is, where he was coming into the NFL coming out of Wyoming. So, yes, the empty portion of it is good for Josh Allen, and I think it'll be good for him again in 2019.
Allen overall, like what kind of a step do you think is realistic for him, Joe? With all this taken into account, like recognizing what they've added and how they finished the year and how they utilized him and tried to play to his strengths, I would expect that that only gets enhanced here going into year two. Like what's a good step for Josh Allen?
Well, I think in order to talk about that step, I think we need to talk a little bit about some of the things that are different for him right now. Obviously, the personnel is better. We've already kind of established that. But the upgrade at quarterbacks coach, last year, you know, their quarterback coach, David Culley, he was never an NFL quarterbacks coach before in his career. The last time he coached quarterbacks specifically was 1990 at UTEP. I thought that was a major disservice to him. And then you had the situation with McCarron, Peterman, and Allen going into the season. All three of those guys wanted to be the starter. And what that really did is it robbed Josh Allen of reps throughout the course of the offseason to really build chemistry and build a volume of plays that was favorable to him entering his rookie season. And so with Josh Allen being the guy from day one with an established quarterbacks coach with better personnel across the board on offense, you like to think that the stage is set for him to take that step. And what I really hope to see from Josh Allen this year is a quarterback that is more comfortable working his progressions, seeing the entire field, and being a little bit more controlled under chaos, knowing where his outlets are. And I think with the spacing type of stuff that we talked about earlier, that opportunity is going to be there. We obviously know that Josh Allen works really hard. His intangibles are there. But can he put it all together? I think that's kind of been the challenge throughout watching him at Wyoming and even into last season is, can he put all of the components into playing quarterback into one play? We know he can throw the ball down the field. He can make every throw. We know he can run. We know he can make people miss in the pocket. But can he combine it all consistently to keep the Bills' offense on schedule? There's a reason to believe that he can do that. It just needs to happen.
Talking with Joe Marino, senior analyst for the Draft Network, also one of the hosts of the Locked On Bills podcast. How about on the other side of the ball real quick, Joe? I mean, we focus so much on offense and the running back depth chart and, of course, Josh Allen's development. I wrote about the season and expectations here, year three with McDermott, year three with Bean, year two with Allen. They've got pieces on defense, too, here at each level. They've got a stud that is highly drafted, and Tremaine Edmonds at middle linebacker. I guess Tredavious White wasn't that highly drafted. He was 27th overall, but he's a stud at cornerback. And now Ed Oliver, 9th overall this year, is added to the mix. How good do you think this defense can be?
It's already really good, and I think that the addition to the defense of Ed Oliver is going to make a big deal. There's no replacing Kyle Williams and what he meant to the football team. But I think what you get in Ed Oliver, especially comparing him right now to where Kyle Williams was over the last couple seasons of his career, is a much more dynamic player, a guy that's better equipped to be a penetration-style wrecking ball three technique that I don't think that Sean McDermott had, you know, during his time with the Bills. And that's an important position in a 4-3 defense. You like to think between E.J. Gaines and Kevin Johnson and Levi Wallace coming back that the cornerback opposite of Trey White is going to be a much more stable position than it was at times last year. And so all of that, the continuity, the communication piece of it should be even better. There's a lot to like about this defense. I expect it to be one of the better units in the league, and really the pass rush to me is what's got to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Hughes last year was a really good pass rusher. The sack totals weren't there, but the pressures were very consistent. Well, Jerry Hughes is applying consistent heat off the right edge, but there's no other pressure that's complementing that coming from any other direction, not up the middle or not from the left edge. And when there's only one guy getting pressure, it creates very easy opportunities for the quarterback to step up or flee. Now you have an Ed Oliver in the middle that you like to think that interior push is going to be there. And I guess hopefully you know, with Shaq Lawson in a contract year, you know, the Bills didn't pick up that fifth-year option. You know, he's wanting to position himself to get paid, and if you get sacks, you get paid in the NFL. You can get the best version of him. Can Trent Murphy rediscover his 2016 form? If these things can happen, the pass rush can take that next step, and I think that's going to be the critical component in this team getting more takeaways and building on the strong defenses that Sean McDermott's had in 2017.
Are you finding, Joe, as you look at pass rush around the league in the last year or maybe a little more than that, that teams are maybe leaning more on guys coming through the middle? I mean, everybody would like to have Aaron Donald, and that's the idea when you draft Ed Oliver, is that you're hoping to find somebody that can be some reasonable facsimile of that kind of a penetrator and disruptor in the middle. Given how quickly quarterbacks are getting the ball out, I mean, offenses are just more and more offsetting those pass rushes from the edge by getting the ball out in 2-point-whatever seconds, and it's just not time to get home, whereas, you know, in the middle, you're that much closer and you have a chance to even be that much more disruptive. Is that a trend in the league, or am I overstating that?
No, I think you're exactly right. Look at the entire AFC East between, you know, Quinn and Williams, Ed Oliver, and Christian Wilkins. All three teams, not the Patriots, took interior penetrators that can rush the passer defensively, and I think that is a big deal. With today's NFL offenses, they're attacking with pace and space, and the easiest way to disrupt that is with pressure up the middle. Then you need speed on the second level, and I think versatile safeties. I think that's really how you counter the way that these NFL offenses are playing. But pressure up the middle is always undefeated, and you're seeing more athletes coming into the league that project. Everyone wants that next Aaron Donald-type player, and you're seeing those guys vaulted up the draft board every year. It's definitely a premium thing.
All right. What have I left out here? What have I left unchecked? Are we good? Is there anything you need to promote while we've got you on the line here, Joe?
I guess if I wanted to promote anything, I'd like to say happy birthday to my grandmother, Judy. She just celebrated her birthday, and of course, her and her husband, Don Schubert, they just celebrated their anniversary. So happy birthday, Grandma, and happy anniversary to the both of you.
All right, that is very nice. Nice shout-out. All right, Joe, we always love these visits. Enjoy the analysis and all the work you're doing with the folks at Draft Network and everywhere else that you got your fingers in. Thanks for the time on a Friday night, man.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
That is our buddy Joe Marino, the Draft Network. Excellent analysis. And, I mean, these guys, like Joe especially, he comes on and it's just, he's just hammering nails. Like, he's just got these points just ready to go, and he just is hitting it. Love the conversations. All right. We'll take a break here. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Anything you've heard here along the way, analysis of Josh Allen, conversations with Sal and with Joe about McCoy and the backfield and everything else, love to hear you. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We've got Brian Colesdale coming up in about 20 minutes, but still some time if you want to get in. Mike has the day off today. I'm the Bulldog. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, I think he improved a lot over the last part of the season, Murph, because I think for middle linebackers, the one thing you're always looking at, and people use the word instincts, another one of those sort of catchphrases. For me, the term I always use is play recognition, because what you have to understand, you have to understand formations, you have to understand the depth of the back, you have to understand where the back is, you know, which side he's offset. Is he offset to the passing strength or to the running strength? Those kinds of things.
That is more from Greg Cosell. He was on with Murph and Tyler Dunn, our buddy from Bleacher Report, who's on with us on Monday. He did the full shows yesterday and today with Murph on One Bills Drive while Steve Tasker had a couple of days off. With definitely more football coming here in this back half of the show. We've got Brian Colesdale coming your way in just a little bit on the British Open. So we'll get to that as well. I want to spend just a few minutes here, Joe, and I don't think I've talked to you about it yet. This query I put out on Twitter about what, how did I word it? Because I it's, you know, it's a little clumsy to ask, but in your athletic prime, assuming you had one, what sport slash position do you think you could have credibly played? And by credibly, I mean, you know, professionally, like in front of fans and like a TV audience, where everyone watching wouldn't immediately identify you as, like, why is there a clown show playing? Why is there a contest winner on the field or the ice or whatever? Do you have an answer to that question or no?
Kind of. I mean, like, I always hate, like, looking back, I always hated, like, how I love playing every sport. I feel like every sport I could play and not embarrass myself, like, in, like, regularly, but I never got really good at one sport. Maybe golf would be my answer for this. Because, I mean, I was good as a kid, and then I went for the golf team at my high school, like, really early on, like, maybe freshman or sophomore year, and came really close, didn't get it, so you know what, like, next year, like, not even thinking about how much better I could get with coaching or sticking with it, I'm like, you know what, I always wanted to play football, so I'm just gonna go for football. I kind of just gave up golf. I gave up golf, pretty much, like, at least
as a competitive real endeavor.
So
yeah,
that would have been the closest thing. Like, if I had, looking back, just been like, you know what, I'll have fun playing football, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm 5'7". Like, there's only so much I can do there.
Right.
Whereas golf, it was like, okay, I wonder, looking back, how good I could have really gotten if I was playing every day. Like, I wasn't like a country club kid or anything, but some of the kids on that team were. And I'm playing near their level, so that always stuck to me. Like, with a coach playing more regularly, like, how good could I have gotten?
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
That's the closest, though. Yeah. Otherwise, like, yeah, first base, I think I could do it.
Yeah, right.
Like, a holder. I could be a holder, I think, in the NFL, and no one would notice.
You sure you'd be able to catch that ball? That ball is humming.
I think I could catch that ball.
Yeah?
That's got to be the thing about that is I probably have to punt, though. I also have to punt. Like,
right.
I don't think you can just be a holder. That position doesn't exist.
Usually that's right, yeah.
But in terms of, like, a job on the field, I think I could get on a knee and I could catch that snap.
I always thought first base, and I said today in the first very very first portion of the show, I think that was stupid. I don't think even in the best shape I was ever in that I would have moved smoothly enough and been ready to field. Kyle told us earlier, like, guys at that level, we're talking about Major League Baseball, okay, are throwing the ball like 80 miles an hour to first base. And, like, I've never come close to – I don't think I've ever even seen a ball come near me at 80 miles an hour. Like, I feel like it would Charlie Brown me. Like, my stuff – it'd be a yard sale. It's like, ah! Like, why is that ball making a noise? It's like zipping as it's kind of, that would, I don't think I would be able to handle it. It would hit me in the face.
I think I would probably close my eyes and just hope. Like, I would be like, all right, I'm ready for it. Ball's on its way. And then right before, I'd probably close my
eyes. Like, what's the fastest batting cage you ever stepped into?
Oh, not near that.
No, right. Me either. And it blew me away. Like, I think I went to the 65 miles an hour, maybe.
Yeah, maybe around there, somewhere in the 60s.
And I couldn't even, you know, I played a little baseball. I was never good, and, you know, really good or anything. But, you know, you think, like, all right, yeah, I can 65, fine, yeah, all right. Oh my God, it's obscene. So a ball coming at me from third base, traveling at 75 or 80 miles an hour, I just think would melt my brain. So, yeah, a lot of good responses on Twitter. I didn't end up spending as much time with this as I was maybe hoping to, but a lot of fun, man. A lot of people are in on baseball. You know, a couple of broomball responses. My buddy Greg says javelin catcher, which is a little funny. Someone suggested soccer goalie, and I think under the premise that I presented this under, that works. Like, you get on the field and, like, okay, I'm okay here. Like, I'm all right, you know? It isn't until, like, it really gets heavy that maybe you're going to be in trouble, you know? But a fun little exercise, and I appreciate everyone on Twitter who contributed to that conversation. I'm going to take an early break here to thus make sure I leave enough time for Brian, who's making time for us, to fill us in on what happened in round two of the British Open. So we'll take a quick time out here. Brian Colziel on the other side on today's second round of the Open Championship from Northern Ireland. I'm the Bulldog. Mike has the day off. This is WGR.
More frustrating than anything else, because this is a major championship and I love playing in these events, and I love the atmosphere. I love just the stress of playing in a major, and unfortunately I've only had a chance to win one of them and was able to do it, but the other three I didn't do very well.
I think you got to take that if you're Tiger. I mean, it's tough to miss the cut at the British, but he won the Masters, right? I mean, that's a pretty good score, I think, right? For the year, you won one of the four majors. Oh, what a terrible year! It's got to be tough. If he's struggling physically, that's got to be challenging. After being at such a high, though, in April. All right, Brian Colziel's on the Wester Hotline. I am the Bulldog. Mike has the day off today. And I don't know, Brian, I'm thinking other than Justin Rose here, who's two back, we're in great shape going into the weekend, are we not?
Yeah, I feel like I almost want to spend the money this weekend. I know that's not the best thing to do, but you're right. I mean, other than Rose, I feel like we're looking very, very, very good. The only hesitation is that the guys at the top haven't really ever closed the deal in a major before. We know Rose can do it.
Right.
But there's a lot of other names around Rose, like Koepka and Spieth, that we know I'm sure will provide an ample challenge as well. So yeah, I'm happy where we are in terms of our pick 10 bet.
Right. Have you really studied it? I think Schauffele might be the next closest guy that Mike has. And he is, I saw him a minute ago. He's five back. So, I mean, that's not insurmountable, you know, with the weekend and who knows with the conditions and, you know, whatever. But that the conditions will sort of be mitigated by the field being trimmed once the cut has been made, right? Like most guys will be playing and maybe mostly the same sort of day, right?
Yeah, so I would guess that we're not going to have that major gap that we talked about yesterday.
Right.
Between times. So, yes, you know, could one or even both of the leaders fall back? Sure, but I think there's a nice bulk of proven players that I don't see that many players just all of a sudden collapsing that we're going to see a ton of Mike's guys all of a sudden
right.
play.
Right. He's got Fowler and he's got DJ, and those guys are all tied with Schauffele. So like he's got a group of guys that are five back. So like we'll see what the weekend brings. What the major takeaways from today's round two, Brian?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at the top, first of all, I mean, JB, I thought, or Shane Lowry maybe would come back today, and they did not. So kudos to them that they would continue to play well. They're just, again, not putting themselves in trouble. It seems like an easy recipe to just say, don't get in trouble off the tee. The only time that they both dropped strokes is when they got in trouble off the tee. So I would say that if they can be as accurate as they were, then there's no reason why they shouldn't be in contention. Lowry's an interesting story because of the fact that he is Irish. And, you know, I mean, I know that, you know, McIlroy and McDowell and Darren Clark are probably a little more higher on the popular meter over there. But, I mean, to have an Irishman in contention and tied for the lead going into the weekend here with this tournament being in Ireland and the historic significance of it coming back is a pretty cool story. And, you know, Lowry is a guy that plays kind of half PGA Tour, half European Tour events. And he's been in contention here. There, he had a couple of good tournaments to the point where I actually took him as one of my underdog guys for the U.S. Open. He had a good Canadian Open and another good event or two before that. But I think that, you know, him going on and winning it in Ireland, although that might not be a popular story here in the U.S.,
Right.
I think that would be about as good as it gets for everybody that's over there that's so excited to have it in Ireland for the first time in forever.
Yeah, yeah, I would think that would resonate to some degree, for sure. Brian Colesdale's on the Western Hotline with me here. Mike has the day off. I'm the Bulldog. So, how about Tiger and Phil? Did I have this right? I said it earlier, and I read it earlier, and I want to make sure I had it right. They played a total together of 85 majors, like the same majors at the same time, in other words. So they've competed in 85 majors at the same time. And today was the first time that both of them have missed the cut in any of those, which is, that's really something.
Yeah, it is, and that's correct. I double checked that. I checked another source. You're right. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, obviously, you know, Tiger's missed a few majors within there. So maybe Mickelson might've missed a cut solo, mm-hmm. but when they've both played, which is a ton, as you said, in the 80s, I mean, that shows how good that the two of them have been and just their longevity. It's too bad that, as you mentioned, that Tiger's going to have to be dealing with just, we feel like, health issues all the time. And I'm just hoping that Masters thing isn't truly the end, and maybe it was just, you know, one magical week where it all came together for him. I hope that we'll get more moments like that. I hope that maybe what Nick Faldo said yesterday that we've talked about is that it's just the back not holding up well in colder conditions.
Yeah.
Hoping that when he plays regular tour stop events or when he plays other majors and you consider it to be warmer weather and things like that, that he can still contend. Because that Masters was truly, you know, a great sporting event to see. You know, it was of a historical measures to see him come back and do that. So I hope that we're not going to get more of what we saw today going forward, but Tiger seemed to allude to the fact that it's going to happen. Like, he's going to have some good weeks, and then he's going to have weeks like this where he just can't feel comfortable physically. And I guess, in some sense, you know, we can't relate to playing golf at the level of Tiger Woods, but we can all relate to maybe getting older and having your body do what it just isn't capable of, maybe what it did 15 or 20 years ago, and throw in the surgeries, the wear and tear, and then the major back fusion surgery that
yeah.
wish that upon anybody. Like, I understand maybe why sometimes that it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be all athletes at the highest levels have to deal with injuries, and they have to deal with their health and coming back from their health. And I always am somewhat, I don't know, amazed is too strong, but I'm impressed when guys are able to do that work time after time. And like Woods has really been through, say what you will about his, you know, his off the course life, his private life, like just athletically speaking, he has been through the ringer physically. There's just no question about it. And I wonder sometimes how much mentally a guy can take, like if it's starting like, oh, here we go again. And do you really have it in you to sort of do the work that's necessary just to get where you even have a chance to be competitive?
Yeah. And the, like you said, the mental side, the thing that struck me was he did a short interview with Jimmy Roberts on Golf Channel after his round. And at the end, Roberts was basically kind of just saying, okay, like, you know, what's next? What's your plan? And he gave like the most human answer ever. He's like, I just kind of want to go home. Like,
right.
I was like, yep. We all have been there for right. some point. You know, I just want to go home. Like, that, it sounded as human as ever for a guy that usually doesn't let his guard down to let people know truly how he's feeling. So I guess, you know, when they asked him about maybe playing next week is a bigger event on the tour. It's a world golf event. And they thought he might play because it's in Memphis, probably his final chance to play before the FedEx Cup playoffs come in August. But one guy that is going to play next week, we heard him commit to it, was McIlroy, and he was kind of a dramatic story.
That was a story today for sure. Yeah, I mean, Brian, that shot on 18, I don't know if you saw it, if you were already on the road, because I know you're traveling. I mean, he was right in, I mean, he had a great look at it. Easy shot, and he just missed it a little left, and it just got lost, and like that was, he was so close to just getting another birdie chance and getting the weekend and have it go away after the day he had yesterday, followed by such a much better day today. That was really tough to watch.
Yeah, I did wait to make sure that I saw him finish to see if he could make it. I mean, I can't remember the last time that I was drawn into seeing if someone would make the cut or not in an event.
Right.
But you felt like the whole country's weight was watching him at that point, and he had to feel that too. But to go from shooting a 79 then to a 65, I mean, what an improvement. And to think about, though, yesterday, the strokes that we talked about that got away, but the one that I'm sure he's going to agonize over forever was that, like, three-inch tap-in that he kind of was lackadaisical with and just kind of tapped it back, and then it rung out on him yesterday on the 16th hole. I mean, to think that if he had just lined that up and just tapped it in properly, like he's probably done a million times, then he would have been playing this weekend. And who knows? I mean, if he makes it, if he gets the plus one, then he's, what, nine back? I mean, it's not impossible. Molinari last year came back from being down, I think, five or six, and we know Rory's capable of doing what he did today. So, I mean, I wouldn't have said he was going to go on a win, but it would have been fun to follow to see if he could have built off of what he did today.
So real quick here, who do you like out of the group? I mean, you know, Fleetwood, Lee Westwood's up there. Of course, your leaders, you already talked about Lowry. Koepka's three back. I don't know. I mean, if you had to bet now, so is Spieth. Who would you Finau's there at four back. Like, who would you take for the weekend?
I still think I would go with Koepka. I know that sounds like an easy answer, but he's the most proven guy up at this top of this board. Justin Rose, I guess I could say the same about, but he this year, I feel like, has gotten away. Sometimes we saw it so much in the U.S. Open with scrambling. I didn't see as much of his round as televised today as maybe some of the other guys, so maybe he is getting a little bit more accurate and has got his game back going, but I feel like I'd still take Koepka. Spieth's intriguing. He loves putting on these slower greens, and he's a guy that I feel like is exciting if he's involved. But Lee Westwood would be an interesting story, too. I mean, he's a guy that has played in more majors than anybody without winning one, and he could sneak in and somehow get this done. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of nice, subtle storylines that could develop here with maybe if Koepka wins, I think that ends up being the biggest story of all, though.
Yeah, right, sure.
That now Rory is gone and Tiger is gone.
Right. Real quick here, because we're really up against the clock here, but I mentioned you're traveling. You're on the road for Tee to Green tomorrow. Where are you at?
That's right. We're actually down in Pennsylvania tomorrow, Bradford, PA, at a place called Penn Hills Club. And 2 hours tomorrow, myself and Kevin Sylvester and PGA Pro Jeff Mitis will be talking a lot more about the Open.
All right. Look forward to that, Brian. Thanks a lot for making the time.
You got it. Have a good weekend, Chris.
All right. That's Brian Koziel. Tomorrow, 7 to 9, Tee to Green. Make sure you check it out. We'll get back to football. Sal Capaccio has got a couple of new pieces up at WGR550.com, one on the running back depth chart, the other on draft day trade rumors from back in April. We'll focus more on the running back conversation, but Sal, straight ahead. I'm the Bulldog. Mike has the day off. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.